Hi, this is Lauren Jubilier, and I am so happy to be greeting you today with this edition of the Libra Equinox in Chapel Hill today. It is just glorious. I have a lot of purple flowers in my garden and a lot of orange. So just imagine like swaths of orange and purple and green with the golden sunlight coming in and the blue, blue sky that flits all around me. And I hope that wherever you are, that you are able to take in the beauty of this season and to feel the stirring and the changes that happen at this time of year. So I want to start by saying that whenever I do these, I add some astrological language, and I want to make sure that you understand that you don't have to ask your mind to track this, and just let it wash over you gently, and really just listen for what are the messages for you? What are the energies that are available now that are reflecting something that's happening for you, and where's the wisdom? Don't get caught up in, did she say Saturn or Pluto? And what does that mean again? I use those words because some of you really like that and it helps you to learn astrology. But most of you just want to, you know, learn about what is the energy that's available for you and how do you work with it? So I just want to start with that and just say that I also want to, for all of us to just take a moment to get grounded in our bodies and take a few deep breaths and feel yourself settling. And let's take a moment to just thank the spirit of the land where you live for continually nourishing your life so that you can live on this beautiful planet in this place. And we thank our higher selves for the guidance and the wisdom that is always available to us. We acknowledge and honor our own luminosity and the luminosity in one another and in all life. And that's a really big theme for this equinox. So let's get to it. So we have the Libra equinox, which is the astrological energetic signature for the next 3 months. And so it's the birthday of the season. In the northern hemisphere, it's fall. In the southern hemisphere, it's spring. So what's very cool at the equinoxes is that we have exactly 12 hours of day and 12 hours of night all over the world at the same time. And that only happens at the equinoxes. It's a powerful time for ceremony and intention setting. At the solstices and equinoxes, the Earth's magnetic field shifts. It allows for more light to come in from the sun, the energy frequencies of the sun, and the light being flooded from galactic center. And this is measured, this can be measured in the ley lines of the Earth, which exponentially increase at solstices and equinoxes at this time. So the energy just gets very strong for creation. So let's talk about the energies that we're going to be creating this. You know, there's a lot of source energy that's flooding us during the season that's supporting us in evolving through the qualities of awe, of wonder, creativity, partnership, and unconditional love, even as we continue to experience unprecedented tumultuous change, fire, floods, earthquakes, unstable, you know, corrupt politicians, people not getting along, war, right? I don't mean, it's in the midst of this that we find our awe and wonder and creativity and unconditional love and find tangible, practical ways to express that in our lives. And that is a huge theme for this equinox. Another theme are the words completion, change and choice. So the sun is moving into Libra on September 23rd, which is Saturday. And Libra is the sign of the scales, of balance, balancing self with other. It's the sign of relationships, the balance between masculine and feminine. It's the balance between light and dark on our planet. And Libra is a relationship expert. So we call on the relationship expert, the one who is interested in what's happening within themselves, but also equally interested in what's happening with another person, aware of your own feelings and aware of your friends or your partner's perspective or feelings, and seeking to balance, to bring justice and balance. And Mars is also in Libra at this time, and so is the South Node. So there's a lot of Libra energy, and Mars and Libra and Venus are doing a very interesting dance. Venus at this time is in Leo. So I want you to think of Mars as this masculine energy that is the peacemaker, the diplomat, the one who is compassionate and kind, willing to work on relationship, being really supportive of the other. And then you have Venus, fiery, strong, independent Leo. She is creative. She is inspiring. She is radiant. We'll talk more about that. And they are together, supporting one another. So Venus is also being squared by Uranus, and Uranus is featured very prominently. And again, remember, don't try and figure out this. I'm going to explain what this means. So Venus, this means that Venus, the feminine, is breaking free of her perceived limitations as she is supported by the masculine. So we think of Venus and Leo as really activating unconditional love, unconventional awakening, freeing oneself, freeing one's heart to express more generously, the unbounded generosity and the radiant light of our hearts. Now, Chiron is also trining Venus, and Jupiter is squaring Venus, which means that this, it's a healing energy, the healing energy of love, the healing energy of inspired creativity and creative expression and playfulness and being willing to occupy your own life. So there's this invitation for transformation, as well as bringing light to what has been hidden, so that healing can take place. And these energies around the feminine are very harmonious, empowered. It's almost like an elixir that the as above, that the mysteries are offering, that healing can take place more easily now as you become aware and as you bring some creativity to it. And with Libra at the South Node, it's a release point. It's a time to ask the question, is this relationship, is this job, is where I'm living, is all of the like basics of my life, are they guiding me to my full potential? Are the choices up until now guiding me to my full potential? Is there reciprocity and mutuality? Do I feel connected to this? And is this satisfying? So words again about Libra. Libra is the diplomat, the mediator, the peacemaker, the relationship expert. Libra likes to be in balance and harmony and to create balance and harmony in all areas of life between self and other. Libra really is about stating, I am committed to non-hierarchical partnerships, equal partnerships within community, friendship, within myself. And Libra empowers the circle, circular structures where everyone's voice is heard and valued. So I'm going to go quickly through some of the main energies available. So we've got this balance point. Where is there balance in my relationship? Balance in my life? This inner masculine that's soft and supported and supporting of this feminine energy that is fiery and fierce and creative and brilliant, and she brings healing energy. And it's the healing of creativity. And then I'm going to share with you some stories that will bring this all to life. We've got the Sun in Libra opposite Neptune. And again, the Sun is shining light for the expression of the kind, the considerate, the supportive, the vision that holds space for everyone. With the Sun opposite Neptune, the energy that is available is very mystical, very intuitive, very soft and sparkly, very creative, very dreamlike. Neptune opens a portal to the dream world, to the unconscious, to the thinning of the veil. Neptune has a dark side as well, which is deception and mental illness, not dealing with reality at all. And so it's also to just to be aware that in the world around you, there's, you know, we're still dealing with a lot of what's true, what, you know, what's reality, but that, you know, we get to choose what aspect of the energies that are available to us that we empower by paying attention to and being creative with. And so it's a really good time to be creative, to do spiritual practices, to journal, to write down your dreams, to just soak in nature. Now, the Mars in Libra is also opposite Chiron and squared by Pluto, which is really, this is shedding light on all that does not align with Libra. So we are, you know, shedding light on how maybe there isn't balance and harmony, there isn't diplomatic, and seeking to heal, seeking wise counsel, and seeking deep soul healing for the aspect of the masculine that still needs, within all of us and in our world, that is sort of the not being willing to be supportive, not being willing to be considerate of others, not listening to the expression of everyone's needs, not balancing oneself with the other. So looking at how that comes up in the world. And that it, with Chiron there, it's like, this is a time of deep healing, and Pluto's shedding light on the masculine that is frozen in a trauma response of violence and impulsiveness and a love of power rather than a power of love. Whereas Venus in Leo reminds us that it is always the power of love that really truly nourishes us and inspires us and generates life and helps us in regenerating. So we have this enhanced focus on relationships with Mars, the Sun, and the South Node in Libra. And with Venus, which is a planet of love and connection and relationships, you know, having Chiron and Uranus and Jupiter there, there's a really big enhanced focus on relationships. And for having breakthroughs in relationships, healing in your relationships, by following your intuitive flashes, by being willing to let go of the known, of the followed path that doesn't really lead anywhere helpful. It's also about a really huge focus on the unconditional love that comes from the heart of the lion, the heart of each one of us. We were born with a beautiful, brilliant life, our source, our luminosity, and this Venus in Leo being so highly energized, it's easy to access this light and to let it shine and to let it shine through all the areas that feels stressful right now. Leo is about creative self-expression with integrity. And as she is connected to the masculine, coupled with that care and concern and awareness of others, It's that feminine assertiveness, and there's healing energy for relationships of the past and the present and the future. There's a lot of support coming from Uranus for unconventional problem solving, for finding oneself in new territory, to finding new perspectives, new ways of seeing the same old, that are innovative, that involve breakthroughs, but they may involve breakthroughs that start with a breakdown, that are about our awakening and bringing forth our higher frequency, bringing forth revolutionary change that is aligned with our soul's growth and the world's growth. This energy is about the strength of the feminine as she holds open space for creativity and unconditional love and courage for those fragmented parts in all of us to heal so that we can embody partnership and collaboration and mutual support and mutual reception with all life. We also have the North Node in Aries. She's conjunct Eris, we've got the North Node in Aries, another fire sign. We've got Leo in a fire sign. Eris, which is this fiery, strong feminine archetype that is sovereign and creative and independent. These are all the energies of way showers, of leaders, of the fierce feminine who's committed to justice, inclusion, fairness, sovereignty, independence, truth, and creativity. This season is a time to expect the unexpected and to make the break, to allow for space for things to break down so that there can be breakthroughs, so that you can become an attractor field for something that is beyond your normal perceived limitation. We are in the midst of many wake-up calls, seeing things, sparks of light, sparks of awakening, seeing a pattern within yourself. You know, there's a lot of energy here. Pluto is square the nodes. Sedna is square the nodes. I'm going to talk about her in a minute. And Uranus is really highlighted. So this is all about shining light in areas that have been hidden. And with Pluto square the nodes, it's about completing what needs to be completed and what needs to be let go of so that we can become those brilliant way showers, so that we can really access that courage and really create beyond the normal, beyond those limitations that are illusions, so that we have a saying in my coaching program, see it so you don't have to be it. There's a lot of genius that is available to you now. There's a lot of healing. There's a lot of love and creative self-expression. However, with Uranus, it's almost like Uranus is like lightning bolts. And I always say when you're in a Uranus cycle, you want to make space to be struck by lightning in a good way, in a good way. Now, the Tower card, if you look at the Tower card, there's a tower being struck by lightning and it's falling apart and it's crumbling. But the reason that's happening is that the tower is tilted and not on solid ground. And so Uranus cycles, and Uranus has been squaring Venus now for all summer and is still at this time. And we've seen like dams breaking. That's a breakthrough, but it's because the dam wasn't on solid. The dam had problems. That people didn't listen to the experts, didn't fix the problems, didn't pay attention, didn't put resources there. The dam flooded and many thousands of lives were lost. It is a time where we expect earthquakes, floods, volcanic eruptions, breakthroughs, breakdowns, but we also expect genius, intuition, flashes of insight, evolutionary leaps in consciousness that are nonlinear, that are not like step by step. If you look at animals that have gone through evolutionary leaps, it's usually when they're about to go extinct that something jumps and there's an evolutionary leap forward and something dramatic changes and that extinction does not happen. And humanity is at that point, but it's at a point where those leaps are coming, need to come in our consciousness so that we can have the courage to take new actions. And there have been huge leaps in consciousness, and now it has to do with using these fiery energies to have the courage. The North Node in Aries is about courage, being a leader, doing things differently. Leo is about that. Leo adds the quality of creativity and heart. And Eris is about that, like, fiercely committed to inclusion and justice and fairness and nobody left out and truth. And those are highlighted at this time. So, yes, Uranus does destabilize the structures that are not on solid ground. And so you might want to ask yourself, how can I place myself within myself on solid ground so that I can withstand the change that is happening within me and all around me? So, I want to talk a little bit about the North Node. I really went through a lot of this quickly because I want to get to something that is really speaking to me about this time. And that is that, first of all, Pluto is spending in the season its last bit of time in Capricorn. Pluto moved into Aquarius, and then Pluto went retrograde and is going back over some time in Capricorn until January. So we have Pluto squaring the North Node, and the North Node is our collective growth point. So Pluto is acting our collective growth point, which is about death, rebirth, regeneration, shining the light on what we haven't seen, what's been hidden, so that we can transform and transmute and make new choices. We also have the dwarf planet Sedna. She was discovered in 2003 and was the first planet or dwarf planet or any planet to be named not after a Greek or Roman god, but after an indigenous goddess. The Inuit goddess of the sea is Sedna. So both Pluto and Sedna are activating a very powerful initiation around new ideas, new initiatives in communication. So Sedna, I'm going to tell you the story. There are many myths. So there's many stories around Sedna. But there's a couple of things that are common to all. So one is it's time for her to get married, and she ends up, in some stories, she refuses to marry any man, and she marries a dog. In other stories, her father selects a suitor for her that becomes an abuser, and actually it's a bird god, and her abuses her and enslaves her, and she calls out for her father to rescue her, and he comes to get her in a canoe. And because her husband is very angry, he waves his wings and he flips up the seas, and the canoe starts taking on water. And in order to save himself, the dad throws his daughter into the sea. And she tries to climb back onto the canoe, and he cuts off her fingers. And she tries to climb back on the canoe again, and he cuts off her hands. Finally, without any means of getting back on that boat, she lets go, and the water is absorbed into the source, the sea, and she is transformed into a mermaid, and she grows a tail, and her fingers that are cut off become dolphins and turtles and seals and whales, and she becomes the Inuit sea goddess. And when the hunt is on, the shamans go into a trance, and they go into the bottom of the sea to visit Sedna. And what do? They comb her hair, and they caress her gently. And this, I believe, is a very, very, I'm going to just share with you some thoughts about this, lots to say about this. So there are lots of stories about Sedna, but every single story, she ends up in a canoe with her father, and he cuts off her fingers and her hands, and she transmutes into a mermaid, and her fingers become all of the sea creatures, the dolphins and the sea. So that is in all of it. So this is a story about betrayal. It's a story about grief. It's a story about rage. It's ultimately about surrender and transmutation and reconciliation and repair. It is the shamans that offer the repair. You know, there is a very big question floating about this, about why do we hold on to the boat? She is, you know, married off according to her father's choice, not her own. She's imprisoned. She's abused. Then her father, you know, basically throws her to the sea. And this story is about being betrayed by a way of life, being betrayed by what we might just call for a short term by the patriarchy. But it's also about stabilizing peace and prosperity, because it is Sedna that offers up the fish for the hunt and offers up. She is a major source of nourishment. She teaches us how to release our attachment, to step away into a new way of being. We must let go of the boat and to align with our source energy, which is the water. So the question is, why do any of us clamber onto the boat, which is not safe? You know, she is expecting her father, who's already thrown her off into the boat. He's already cut off her fingers to save her, to be a source of nourishment, to take care of her, to be a parent to her. But her father, being raised in a society, he does not know how, right? He is incapable of doing this clearly, yet she still tries. And so for me, this is a story about, where do we do that to ourselves? How do we, you know, we keep going over and over again into experience, whether it's a job you don't like, a relationship that's not working, or how you treat yourself, how you disconnect or disengage from aspects of yourself that you'd rather throw off the boat and cut off the fingers and stop crawling to the boat, leave me alone. How we do, and that Sedna has no choice but to surrender. She's in a deep initiation and the water takes her and transmutes her. This is also a myth where we don't see death, rebirth, and regeneration. We see surrender to the water and transmuting into a goddess, into the goddess of the sea. So this is about how we transmute. And how do we outsource our care to those who do not know how to care for us? And how do we internalize our abandonment or the abuse or the neglect or the culture that we live in that is unraveling? So this is a story about not holding onto the rubble of what is, falling apart, and choosing. We must choose to let go and to surrender. We must let go and trust the process of alignment, trust the process of our intuition. We must let go of the boat, let go of the old story of separation and how that has dominated our lives, whether it's how we've been raised or how we continue to be with ourselves. We are living in turbulent times that are full of betrayal, neglect, power grabbing, and deceit. And yet we are also living in unprecedented times of awakening, of magic, of of shimmeriness, of dancing and singing and creative expression. And we must choose. And the North Node in Aries and Venus in Leo are the feminine is leading the way with creativity, with love. With this, you know, Leo radiates light from her heart, the way the sun radiates light for us to feel and to know and create with. And we're being asked to focus, not to focus on the boat that is the rubble, but to focus on the creative expression that we can master, that we can create with. And there's many themes of this. So letting go of the familiar, letting go of what is habitual inside of you, but also toxic to you, these conditioned tendencies that do not serve, how you've internalized old paradigms, whether they're from your families or the cultures
or from past lives, the courage to release and to see what is already infinite within you. And I want to share with you some stories about this, because this might seem a little bit, I don't know, too theoretical at this point. So I'm going to share stories about myself and a friend of mine. So at the spring equinox, I was completing a Uranus cycle, and I was in Costa Rica, and I was teaching and facilitating a healing retreat with some friends of mine. And someone had sent me an article that Charles Eisenstein wrote called, "In order for it to happen everywhere, it has to happen somewhere." And it was about an eco village in Costa Rica. And a friend sent me this article saying, "Hey, you're going to Costa Rica. Maybe you might want to check this out." And I sent the article to the organizer of the retreat that I was co-facilitating with some others. And she ended up calling the eco village and setting it up so that we would spend a night there and have dinner with the visionary behind this. Because part of this eco village's sort of ethos is they're creating a lot of a sanctuary for healing, a lot of wellness centers, integrative. And they want to meet help, you know, healers. So we get invited over for dinner, and it turns out that this eco village is exactly halfway between where I was teaching and where I was about to go, which was 8 hours away, a perfect place to spend the night. So we go and we have this dinner, and Marcelo, the visionary behind this, it's called La Eco Villa San Mateo, and he starts sharing his vision. And I'm just listening, and I know in my heart that this, I'm hearing something that I wrote for myself. I can sense my own Akashic record opening up and showing me what's next in my life. And I'm really interested. And he's speaking about this vision that I've held in my own heart ever since I can remember, but I kind of gave up on it, to be honest with you. So I think to myself, well, maybe one day after they've completely built this place, I'll buy someone's house who got tired of living there, you know, maybe 5 years from now. And I go on my way and I finish my trip, and I cannot get this place out of my mind. I get to the airport in Florida where my connecting flight is. And, you know, you have to take your luggage off one airplane when it's an international flight, have it go through some customs stuff, and then plop it back on. And I'm getting my luggage, and I see these two women, and they're sparkling and they're shining. And for some reason, I'm guided by some kind of impulse inside of myself to introduce myself to them and say, "Hey, what were you doing in Costa Rica?" And they say, "Well, we went to take this workshop in natural building, you know, building a natural house, because we bought this piece of property in an eco village, sight unseen on the internet, and we wanted to go to the land and ask permission from the land to build a house there and to, you know, connect to the spirit of the land." And then they tell me, and when we went there and we dropped our heart into the land and she connected with us, an eagle soared above us, and soared around us. And we're talking about this, you know, at luggage, getting luggage in Fort Lauderdale. And of course, they're speaking to someone who I teach shamanic journeying as a path to awakening, as a spiritual practice. So all of this is very normal for me. But how do they know that this is normal for me? But at some point, I say to them, "What eco village?" "La Eco Villa San Mateo." So they had bought property at the eco village. And suddenly it dawns on me, I can't wait 5 years. I have to just do this. And I ask them, "Why did you do this? Why did you do this?" And they go down a list of what inspired them. And it's the exact list in my heart, the exact same thing. And I thought, oh my goodness, this is a community of people that are, you know, it's still people, so it's going to be imperfect, but at least holding the intention to create a different kind of community. And so I get home, and Jim and I call our contact there, and we're like, you know, we're going to be in Florida. This is March. We're going to be in Florida again in May, because my mother's having surgery, and I was going to take care of her. And I thought that would be a good time for me to go back and maybe look to see about buying a piece of land. And our contact says, "I don't think you should wait till May, because, you know, the property that you're describing you want with views and sunset views, there may not be any left by May because they're going fast." So Jim and I just got on a plane and went there.
like total intuition. We bought a piece of property and it felt, you know, when you get this huge yes and you have to act. And so we just, everything opened up and we did this. So that sounds great, right? but then, as with any creative process, now there are some other things setting in, like worry and fear. And how am I going to do this? How will I have two home bases, one in Costa Rica and one in my beloved Chapel Hill? Because I don't plan on moving there full time. I plan on living there part time and living here full time, part time. But who knows, right? Who knows what's really going to happen? So in this community, there we are on Zoom events with each other, and we have women's groups and men's groups. And one woman offered a creative expression group for letting go. And I signed up for it. And again, it's like as above, so below. You know, this is the type of work that's really helpful for us to do. To Leo, you know, Venus and Leo with that Chiron healing energy, anything that you can do that has to do with movement and sound and color and art and dance to assist you in healing is going to be really helpful right now. So she had us doing this process of movement and writing and journaling. And so I decided to work with the worrying that was starting to come up about all of the details that had to be taken care of. And so I wrote at the top worrying, and then it was leaving home, and it was sort of a mind map, leaving home and saying goodbye and transitions and then creating home and all the details. And it started to morph into new friends and hiking and rest and adventures and sanctuary and community and mangoes and the sacred. And then there are all these colors. And then I did this writing exercise. And I said, it started with my old, familiar, worn out worrying. So for me, worrying is sort of what I greet at the cusp of transformation oftentimes. I worry about things. And then I worry about worrying. And I said, but the worrying transitioned into community, transitioned into sanctuary, into adventures, into the sacred. Worrying is not the end of this adventure. It's not the end of the story. And then as I was writing, this very loud voice within myself invited me to stop judging the worrying and said, can you embrace your worrying? Can you surround the one who worries with color, with warmth, with acceptance, with love? See how she wiggles and swirls as you do this into her transitions, into creating home, into new friendships, into sanctuary. I'm being invited to embrace all of me, allowing the worrying and knowing that it never ends there. The river keeps flowing. And the reason I'm sharing this story with you is that I have that father inside of me that when I meet the daughter that worries, I throw her off the boat. And when she climbs back in the boat, I cut off her fingers and I say, go away. But really, she ends up in the sea. In the sea of unconditional love, in the sea of the infinite, in the sea of source energy, where she transforms into a mermaid or sea creature with a tail. I call her a mermaid, and she becomes the queen of the sea who offers nourishment to others. But only though the shaman must go and brush her hair and stroke her hair. Why? Because this is repair. This is how we heal trauma. We don't just send it away. And I began this whole time together with you talking about that we've got this Mars in Libra opposite Chiron. We've got this Mars, this masculine energy within us that is seeking healing and is squared by Pluto. And what is the healing? The healing isn't to berate that which is within our culture or that which is within ourselves that does not know how to love or does not know how to express compassion, but to extend compassion towards that. So that this story is sort of a story about that. And my story about Costa Rica is a story about following intuition, but also, you know, that doesn't mean it's all going to be like sunshine and roses. It's not so easy to build a house in a foreign country when you don't live there. There's a lot of steps, but along the way, I am guided by this knowing that whatever this is going to be, it is my next step. I feel that I'm being woven into a vision that I chose for myself before I was born with a whole bunch of other people that are doing the same thing and are taking the same leap. And one day I actually felt really like, oh, the worry was strong. And I went to my favorite cafe near my house that has incredible gluten-free products, great gluten-free bacon. I was just kind of looking around, and this guy comes that I don't recognize, is from behind the counter, and he says, "Doesn't that look delicious?" And we get to talking, and he's adorable, and we make this instant connection. It turns out he has a bakery and turns out that he was a chef for the French Laundry. Or he worked at the French Laundry in New York, which is one of the best restaurants in the world. And he opened up his own, I think, Damn Good Cookies. And he's thinking of moving to Durham. And I think he has an Indian food as part of his thinking, and Ashkenazi Jewish, kind of like this integration of Indian food and Ashkenazi Jewish food and Damn Good Cookies. And he tells me he has his recipe for mango cardamom cookies. And I'm like, oh my God, that is like the best thing ever. And we're talking about him moving to Durham, and I'm like, that would be so awesome. And then I say, hey, mangoes, maybe you could think about moving to Costa Rica. And we start talking, and it turns out he has a lot of friends, or some friends, in Brooklyn who are also moving to the same town, San Mateo, Costa Rica, to live in eco-villages. There's several eco-villages there. There's three or four of them already. I'll be moving to the one that's the newest. And he is already thinking about moving to the same place in Costa Rica as I am, of like, what are the chances? And right before I had gone into this place, I was asking the universe to give me a sign that what I was doing wasn't crazy, because it's a huge leap for me. Anyway, I also want to tell you another story about my friend, Terry McClernand, the food fairy in Chapel Hill. And she received an inspiration or a message from spirit to build a kitchen on her property, so that she could offer her services to more people. She's a personal chef, and she has a personal chef business, but she doesn't have enough personal chefs to meet the demand. So if she has this kitchen, she can, you know, I can order food from the kitchen. There's one or two chefs there, but so can like 30 other people in the same day. And then she would deliver it. And also she had this vision given to her to help me create a food fairy, soup kitchen that would be mobile, that would be giving food, soup to all who need it. And, in any case, it was a huge vision, and she's in the process of doing this and trusting the process and going through all of the things that a person goes through around, you know, what it costs and how you get it done and all the steps. And she also is in Costa Rica with me. And she doesn't make it to the eco village with my part of the group, because she and another friend of ours come down with COVID, and they have to stay back at the retreat center we were teaching at and convalesce. And it turns out that there were these two wonderful angelic beings there that are sort of were on a work away, as you know, and you know how you can travel around the world and have like a work program. Well, they were at this retreat center, and so they took excellent care of Terry and Tavis. They cooked for them, they took care of them, and it turns out that one of them is a gourmet chef, and he is preparing these incredible food for Terry. And Terry invites this couple to come back and live with her for 3 months in the United States to do a work away at her house. And they come, and every day they're cooking for Terry. And one of them is an artist, and she's drawing Terry's kitchen for her, and she's drawing out the food truck, and she's just getting all these images, and she's putting them in art. And she's getting, the artist is getting feedback from all of Terry's friends. What an incredible artist she is. And her partner, who's doing a lot of the cooking, is getting all this feedback about, you know, he's getting mentoring from Terry about how to be a personal chef where he lives in Europe. And Terry is getting nourished very deeply. And each one of them is having this initiation around taking a leap of faith, just giving their gifts to one another and empowering each other to take the next steps in their life. So the artist is taking her artwork really seriously now. She's getting so much feedback.
the chef is realizing that he can have a personal chef business or a restaurant business. He's getting mentoring, and Terry is receiving the nourishment and sustenance that she always gives to others for herself, and it's moving her very deeply. And the artwork is moving her, and they're all kind of going into this new stage of evolution in their lives. And so I'm sharing these stories because I really feel like it, each one of these people had to let go of something familiar, had to let go of a boat that was crumbling, that was not nourishing, to enter into the unknown and to trust the process of synchronicity and to say yes and to take action, and are now experiencing incredible magic in their lives. And that is what this equinox is sharing with us. And there's one more thing I want to tell you, that, you know, I often talk about these dwarf planets. Sedna was the first to be named after an indigenous goddess. But after that, they all started to be named after indigenous creator gods and goddesses. And I also want you to know, and I'm not going to get into the details, but that the Capricorn moon is surrounded, it's squared, it's conjunct, it's walking with, it's squared all of these indigenous beings: Kwa Kwa, Salesia, Maki Maki. Salesia is the Mermalda, is the wife of Neptune, and the Libra sun also. So the moon in Capricorn and the sun in Libra, they're all these, imagine them in the center of a circle. And in the center of the circle with them are these multidimensional creator gods and goddesses that stand for regeneration and magic and mystery and immense creative potential. And they're radiating their light right around the solstice and equinox points and around this moon. And so in many of these creator myths, there's depopulation, there's plagues, there's ecological disaster, pandemics, but they all got turned around and regenerated. And we have these thriving ecosystems, and we have, you know, fertility goddesses, creator gods and goddesses, multidimensional mermaid energy that is here, that is with this time. And at the same time, we've got Venus and Leo, you know, really amplified by multidimensional Uranus. And so we also have Sedna has just moved into Gemini. And Gemini is the storyteller. She's also an air sign. She's going to be there for like 60 or 70 years. She's moved into an air sign at the same time that Pluto is getting ready to move into Aquarius. And we think about air. Air is all around you, but it's invisible. Spirit is around you and within you, but it's not always visible. Take a deep breath. You breathe in the air and it nourishes and sustains your life. Without it, you couldn't exist. But there's no, you know, it's invisible. And so we're moving into a time where what seems to be invisible, or what seems to be out of grasp, is being empowered. With Sedna in Gemini now for the next 60 or 70 years, Gemini is another multidimensional energy that has to do with shape-shifting, that has to do with singing and dancing and using creativity to shape-shift into a new reality, to tell a new story and to live a new story, to laugh and to realize and to remember that all the world's a stage and we can write a new script. And with Pluto moving into Aquarius, empowers the multidimensional innovation of Aquarius, sheds light on new technology, sheds light on all the different aspects of our multidimensional world that we're invisible to, that are invisible to us, but are becoming empowered. So creating a way out of no way. We are seeing the empowerment of eccentricity, authenticity, revolutionary change that is not linear, huge jumps in consciousness that we need to follow through with huge ability and courage to take
new steps in our lives so that we are no longer victims, but co-creators. Pluto in Aquarius is about amplifying other worlds, evolutionary genius, heart-to-heart connection, community, and yes, even shedding light on and empowering technology that both has the power to solve an enormous amount of the problems we're facing today, and also, yes, to create new problems, because it is the consciousness that we create with that really determines how we use technology. And but also about shedding light on technology and innovation that's been hidden from us. You know, I think I've told you before that for every problem in the world, there's someone trying to solve it, and there are about 1,000 angelic beings sending down into that person potential solutions, whether that be in your own life or whether that be a scientist working on how to bring, you know, vibrational healing to our bodies so that we don't have to have harsh medicines for cancer anymore. Many innovations in science and technology and healing are on the cusp of, and also in our consciousness. And we need to remember that. And we also need to also remember that we are living in very trying times, and to give space for the grieving. And we also must relinquish our grasping at an old way of life that no longer nourishes us, and say yes to your intuition, to your own source energy that is connected to your Akashic records, that really knows what the next best step is for you to take. As you dive into those abandoned places within yourself that are very deep, to offer them nourishment, to offer them some love. You know, trust self more. Stay connected. That's what this is about. And definitely work with creativity. One of the creator gods, Quaqua, that is with the moon right now, the way they brought stability and healing to their community was through ritual and singing and dancing. They raised the vibration through that. And so we, again, that is being empowered through this time, as well as we are still in the midst of, you know, this chaotic, tumultuous time. And so I want to finish by just reading you this poem that I've read to you before, but I just love it. It is We Were Made for Times Like This by Clarissa Pinkola Estes. I urge you, she says, I ask you, gentle you, please do not spend your spirit dry by bewailing these difficult times. Especially, do not lose hope. The fact is, we were made for these times. For years, we have been learning, practicing, been in training for, and just waiting to meet on this exact plane of engagement. This is Clarissa saying this. I grew up on the Great Lakes and recognize a seaworthy vessel when I see one. There have never been more able vessels in the waters than there are right now across the world, and they are fully provisioned and able to signal one another as never before in the history of humankind. In any dark time, there is a tendency to veer toward fainting over how much is wrong or unmended in the world. Do not focus on that. There is a tendency to fall into being weakened by dwelling on what is outside your reach. But remember, we are needed. That is all we can know. And though we may meet resistance, we more so will meet great souls who will heal us and hail us and love us and guide it, and we will know them when they appear. Ours is not the task of finding, fixing the entire world all at once, but of stretching out to mend the part of the world that is within our reach. Any small, calm thing that one soul can do to help another soul, to assist some portion of this poor, suffering world, will help immensely. It is not given to us to know which acts or by whom will cause the critical mass to tip toward an enduring good or peace. What is needed for dramatic change is an accumulation of acts, adding more, continuing. We know that it does not take everyone on earth to bring justice and peace, but only a small, determined group who will not give up during the first, the second, or the 100th gale. One of the most calming and powerful actions you can do is to stand up and show your soul. The light of the soul throws sparks, can send up flares, build signal fires, causes proper matters to catch fire. To display the lantern of soul in shadowy times like these, to be fierce and to show mercy towards others, both are acts of immense bravery and great necessity. Struggling souls catch light from other souls who are fully lit and willing to show it. If you would help to calm the tumult, that is one of the strongest things you can do. There will always be times when you feel discouraged. I too have felt despair many times in my life, but I do not keep a chair for it. I will not entertain it. It is not allowed to eat from my plate. The reason is this: there can be no despair when you remember why you came to earth, who you serve, and who sent you here. The good words we say and the good deeds we do are not only ours. They are the words and the deeds of the one who brought us here. In that spirit, I hope you will write this on your wall. When a great ship is in harbor and moored, it is safe. There can be no doubt, but that is not what great ships are built for. This comes with much love and a prayer that you remember why you came to this beautiful, needful earth. And that is by Clarissa Pinkola Estes, who wrote the book Women Who Run with the Wolves. And it is a wonderful summation of the energy of this equinox. So goodbye. Love to all.